This episode is brought to you by Hot Dish Productions, an award-winning modern culinary production company. Learn more at hotdishproductions.com.
Welcome to Processing, a show about the intersection of food and grief, with your hosts, me, Zara Tangora.
And me, Bobby Conforto.
Hey, Mom, we're sitting next to each other in another, what feels like almost unprecedented side-by-side, breathing right into each other's faces episode.
Yes.
I can feel your hot breath next to me. So today we are welcoming to the show an I always say like an incredible guest. All our guests are incredible. Africa Yoon, who is our guest today, has written a book called The Korean, which is coming out in November. Pre-order begins later this month in June. But what a just lively, and you know, Africa talks about in the episode how eating kimchi makes her feel alive. And I think it was
an electric. She is that.
She is such an electric person, such an incredible person, so full of life and love and energy. And she's funny and charismatic and just such a, you know, we record these things in the early, like late morning on Fridays. And, you know, I actually had been feeling I'm going away tomorrow. I'm feeling a little stressed. I have some different sadnesses going on. And meeting with Africa this morning was such a game changer for me in terms of my attitude, how I was just feeling towards the day. Like, her energy was really just so palpable and so beautiful. And I found it to be quite healing.
And she really represents the world.
Yeah.
That's what it felt like.
Yeah, she's someone with a lot of experience with all kinds of different cultures, as you guys will come to find out why that is. And it was just really it just felt like a really special, very unique episode with a very special and unique human being.
Absolutely. Really loved it.
Yeah, really just a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful show. So, as you guys will hear, Africa comes on to talk about her upcoming book, The Korean, and her experiences with kind of discovering Korean culture and cuisine and how it really helped reinvent her as a person and her life and take her to all these kind of unexpected places. And, what a wonderful hour to spend. And we hope that you enjoy it. And, Bobby, how did you feel about our talk with Africa?
It was wonderful. As I said, I felt like we included the world in terms of cuisine, but also humanity. Mm. And that's what it felt like.
Yeah, it was really beautiful. Okay, well, please, without further ado, enjoy our conversation with Africa. And as always, folks, if you have some extra time, please rate, review, subscribe to the show. It helps other people learn about the show. It helps build the show's visibility. And we want everyone to be able to hear our conversations with guests, our wonderful guests such as Africa and all our other wonderful guests. So, please enjoy this episode. And if you are in any kind of a funk or a bad mood before, you will not be after this after this hour. Okay. Love you guys.
Love
Bye.
You. Bye.
Hi, we are being joined by author Africa Yoon today. And Africa, you are joining us very early, as we were just chatting up before the show, from Hawaii, right?
Yes, I am. Aloha, annyeonghaseyo, good morning.
Awesome, good morning. So Africa, you have just written a new book, which we were just chatting also before the show, is going to go on pre-order later this month, but it comes out in November, and it's called The Korean. And your story about how you came to write this book and your love affair with Korean food and culture is just so interesting. And I can't wait to kind of get into that because it really touches so much on what we talk about here about food and grief. But in reading about you and some essays that you had written, I know that your dad was a diplomat for the UN, correct? From Cameroon?
Yes, I came to thank you for having me on. And yes, I came to the United States when I was about 6 years old, and my father was appointed ambassador to the United Nations for my birth country, which is Cameroon.
Amazing. Wow, such an interesting experience. Actually, I had known, like, through a friend of a friend, got the opportunity to go into the UN maybe like a year and a half ago,
oh,
2 years ago at this point.
Oh, yeah, very fun.
It was incredible. I mean, we got to go like to all like the very back, like, this is the room that like no one ever goes in. Except
oh, yes. You got the good tour. You got the good tour. Yeah.
Really an interesting
yeah,
place.
That's like it's so funny because, you know, everybody has the United Nations, but like my brother and I used to play like slip and slide in our socks at the United Nations, you know, like run and slide, like, cause the floors are all like marbles, like perfect for sliding. So when I go to the UN, I have this completely different experience. And I know because when I bring people to the UN, they're like, oh, we're at the UN. And then like, but I realize that for me, it's just a place that feels like home.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really interesting. And it's, you know, when we're kids, like, we don't realize that whatever situation, I always think about this with, you know, kids who maybe grow up as royalty or kids who grow up with celebrities as parents or kids who grow up in poverty, honestly, like, wherever you grow up, whatever your kind of upbringing is very normal and familiar to you. And other people like are just like, wow, I can't believe, you know, you grew up playing slip and slide at the UN, or I can't believe you grew up in, you know, a home where there was 10 people living in the same, you know
yeah,
what I mean?
Like, I mean, even me, I didn't even realize, I mean, I grew up around all these cultures since I'm just like a little kid. And even like celebrities that come to the United Nations, which celebrities have come to the United Nations for many, many, many years. And even celebrities, I mean, I thought like ambassadors and celebrities, all that, I thought it was like the same thing, you know, right, growing up, because I just thought, you know, if you are known for whatever reason, you use who you are to make a difference in the world, right? So for me, like a president or a celebrity or a UN staff, like it was just all the same thing because they came together to make a difference in the world. And sometimes, but I'll tell you a little story to go off. But at one point I wanted to experience American school and my mother put me in American school. And I would like say to the kids, like, what I was going to do, like, oh, you know, I'm not coming to school next week because guess what? I have to go to the General Assembly because it's world, do you know what I mean? And this one is speaking and that one is speaking. And they'd be like, yeah, right. I'm like, what? Like, I always think I should have a sitcom about me, like, going to, like, American school because, like, they didn't believe anything. I was like, oh, I have to go to Paris next week because they'd be like, yeah, right. I was like, that's really happening next week.
Totally. What cultures influenced you? What were the cultures of your childhood that influenced
you? Well, you know, I really just about saw every culture, but I was very fascinated with cultures that were so different. You know, I always say my mother was my first agent because when you're a child at the United Nations, when you have your national day, you greet everybody in an event. And my father was a very dynamic man, Paul Bamila Engo, a great diplomat. And he was very good about knowing all the countries and being very cool. Like, he was cool. You know what I mean? You know how Barack Obama is like cool? My dad was like the African cool and was very friendly with everyone from like on the Kennedy side. But then he knew like the Asian ambassador. He was very dynamic man and speaking. So I didn't really favor any culture in particular, but I did get very interested in food from all of Asia, you know, East and South. I was very interested in the food and I liked the taste. I tasted kimchi first time when I'm 6 years old. And I thought it was a spicy salad is what I thought it was. But I said, oh, this spicy salad is good. Like, I liked it because we eat pepper in my country and kimchi has, you know, a spice. And I liked it very much.
That's amazing.
So you can say I love Korean culture from the very beginning because my mother was very good. I mean, when we were 6 years old, my mother had a conference. She was going in Korea. And my mother took away our knife and fork and gave us chopsticks. And not like my kids. My kids have these fancy training chopsticks, but my mom, my mom just gave us two sticks and was like, we're going to learn how to use these today. And I was like, okay. Yeah, except we were eating African food, like fufu, chicken, right. Not delicate foods, not foods from Japan. Not, we were eating African right. food with chopsticks. So you try to pick up a big chicken with a chopstick and you tell me how that goes.
So that's what you have to use, the stabbing method. Yeah,
well, we can't use the stabbing method because culturally that means a whole thing. See, that's how you're in right. Like, you never want to stick your food into the chopsticks. You never want to put your chopsticks into the bowl because that's symbolizing, oh, your favorite topic, the dead. So you don't want to put your chopsticks inside the bowl. So these are things that I was...
Tell us more. Say that again.
You don't want to put your chopsticks inside the bowl, right? You know, because that's symbolizing like food of the dead. So these are little things that I grew up with knowing. And I think it's why I think having culture is why I, you know, get along with people. I don't always get along with everybody. For the most part, I get along with people because I'm like quite aware of all of the things that mean something, which can make us, know, get along or not get along. And, you know.
Yeah. And also, you know, I mean, being in New York City, aside from just being like experiencing life at the UN and like being privy to many cultures, I mean, just being in New York City too, mm-hmm. is such a wonderful way to grow up and have so much exposure to so many different humans and all, like, I mean, I have lived in New York. I grew up on Long Island, but I've lived in New York for, I don't know, 20 years after that, almost 18 years. And it still never ceases to amaze me just like how lucky I feel when I walk down like, you know, any given city block and like how things change and how many different people are. And that's a real, to me, it always has felt like a real privilege because, you know, you go to other places in the country and the world and it's not like that. Oh, and that's very strange, you know?
Yeah. I mean, my husband grew up in Illinois. And his experience is totally different than mine. You know, so it's like I knew more Korean people growing up than my husband did. And he's Korean.
Yeah. That's wild. Yeah. That's very wild.
I had more.
So I was really just so interested about, I mean, so much of your story, but in, you know, reading about you and learning about how you came to be so interested in and have Korean culture be so, and food be so part of your life. I think the story of how that came to be is so fascinating. Could you just share with us a little bit more about how that happened?
Yes, my Brooklyn friends. And I'm like, you know, I'm an old New Yorker, so I'm like, yeah, Brooklyn, I love it. I feel like you guys are like me and my mother in this weird way. Like, I see your tattoos, girl, me too.
I have a whole sleeve coming up here, lots of different things happening.
Me too.
Cool, what do you have there?
United Nations, you know.
Oh, yeah. Amazing, that's so awesome.
Yeah. And then your mom is like, your mom is like giving me my mom vibes, a shirt, the collar pops. Go Google my mother and you'll see how she how she pops her collar like you, exactly.
Oh, how interesting.
Yeah. So I'm feeling some...
that's awesome.
Well, so I, you know, after all my culturing and everything and all the things that I know and all my well-manneredness, I followed it in my parents' footsteps and I was an activist and I was working a lot. And as I got older, trying to navigate how to do that in my way, I was very interested in entertainment and also interested in activism. And I was melting the two and I was stopping my sport. And I found out that I was, had gained 120 pounds in like a 5-year span. Yes, it was even surprising to me, even though some people had been noticing, but it was even surprising to me. And my mother had a Korean friend, and she had been unwell, this is before my mother left the UN, she had been going to this little strip mall, and where there was this little Korean shop, and she was getting some like healing, whatever, treatments. Anyway, so as I was trying myself, I wanted to get married and I wanted to have children. And I myself was looking for some healing. So I was looking for that place and I fell upon this. This is where H Mart, which is the largest Asian grocery store now. the number one.
Love it.
Yeah. So I fell upon this place, and you know, in Korean culture, in the grocery, they give, you know, like samples. You know, now in American culture, they do it too, like Costco and all those places have samples and things. But yeah, it's something that is very prominent in the Korean grocery store. So this lady was giving samples of this bread. Let me tell you about this bread, girl. This bread is filled with cream in the middle. Buttercream pang. Pang means bread, right? So it's bread with a whole bunch of cream in it. So she's cutting the sample. You know, Koreans always cutting with the scissors. She's cutting the samples. Uh-huh. I'm eating it. And I don't look anything like any UN daughter at all. Oh my God, the bread.
This sounds amazing.
This bread was good.
Yum.
Okay, so here she is eating the bread. All of a sudden I hear something. You're too fat. I said, I might be from the UN, honey, but I can throw down, okay? I'm African-American. We don't take that, okay? I turn around, and what do I find? A little old lady. So, of course, UN snaps back like, oh, elder, must right. act respectful, even though she is like dogging me. Like, I'm like, lady.
That's a very brazen thing to just say to a stranger.
I'm giving my best UN. I'm like, okay, yes, that hurt. So she tells me you're too fat. So I said, well, since I know how to talk to people, I said, since you know what I should be eating or not eating, what do you think I should eat? And she was like, Korean food. And she and I struck up a friendship that lasted about, you know, a year, and I lost 110 pounds. Wow. Yeah, that's the basis of the, you know, the Korean book is this woman sharing her culture. And listen, she was very funny. She was a very funny lady because, you know, like I started losing weight, and you know, for me, I was like, okay, I lost weight. I was like, look at me, I look good. Like, I started coming back. I was like, yeah, look at me, I look good. I lost 10 pounds. Okay. So I would go and be like, ta-da, what do you think, lady? And she'd be like, still too fat, too fat. I was like, okay. So that's how Korean culture entered my life. It's not, I had not never had Korean food, but I had certainly not had it in my fridge. And I certainly didn't go grocery shopping for it, but I had eaten it out. And I did like it, I guess, enough. I had enough of a palate taste for it. And also, I'm international, for me to receive all of the cultural information that she was passing on to me so kindly.
Go ahead, Bobby.
So what was the philosophy in a way? What's the philosophy of Korean food that makes it a healthy food?
Well, this is where your show is actually perfect to talk about my book. Even though it doesn't seem like it's perfect to talk about my book, it actually is quite perfect because Korean food, it's all about balance, mixing and balance and nature. And so what I know now that I didn't know then because I was just at the beginning in a weight loss thing, is that she was really showing me about the balance of nature. You know, she never said no anything. She was giving me greens. She was giving me wide variety of foods. She was giving me tea. She was just giving me everything from the store that I guess she was thinking was going to be making me well and balanced. And it wasn't too hard because I was so incredibly out of balance. One might even say I was in the process of dying, right? Like my body was and I didn't go to the doctor at that time because maybe I didn't want to know. But you know, this like cycle, right? You could almost say I was dying. And perhaps if I had gone to the doctor at that time, somebody might have started to tell me about the risks that the amount of weight that I had gained was going to have an effect, right?
Right.
This
Can I just ask you a question for a second, which I think is interesting. I don't want to miss the opportunity to ask this.
Yeah.
Which is that, you know, I guess when I hear you say that your body was out of balance mm-hmm. to the extreme where you felt like you're almost dying, you know, how did you get there? Like, how did you get out of balance in that way? Was that a direct response to another kind of grief? Or was it just like, you know, I'm just curious to know how you became unbalanced.
I definitely have a cycles and thoughts about death of self and rebirth of self a lot in my life. You know, if you think about how I was brought up, I was this very structured upbringing and a definite path, right? It's like, I wasn't like, what am I gonna do? Like, I knew, even when I didn't, if I wouldn't know what to do, I certainly had things to do, right? We do this and this and this and this and this. Even if it's just, we do charity, we do this, we volunteer. I'm quite busy, like not like wondering what to do in the day. So then when I started to do that I don't believe was what I was supposed to do. Even though I helped a lot of people, even though I enjoyed it, even though I love to give, that was not where I was supposed to go. But it is where I was supposed to go because it was going to lead me. And I believe that I went that path so off of who I was. I mean, three varsity sports, every dance class. I was a skinny little thing. I never had, weight was not a thing. Before Ambassador, my father was an Olympian. So like, if you look at my brother, the kid never had a drop of fat in his life, you know? But I was off course, but I wasn't off course for a bad reason. I was off course for me to understand what people are going through. I was off course so that I could learn. So God had a plan for me to learn and understand, because I would have never been able to tell you what does it feel like to be fat. I would have never been able to tell you what does somebody go through that is so depressed. I mean, I was so depressed. My God, just thinking about depression, I can cry, the deep depression that I had.
Oh, yeah.
I would have never known it because I never, even with whatever issues that I would have, busy father or whatever. Oh, busy father. Yes, busy father syndrome. I never could have told you that kind of like despair. I could have told you about it because of my work. I've met this one has been depressed and this one has been in trouble. This one has died. I've seen death close. I've seen somebody in the village hungry. I've seen it all, but I didn't have it on my person. So right. I had
I'm thinking about that word disease. You know, I'm sure you've heard people say dis-ease.
Yeah. Oh, I was not. And that's a perfect
description of what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
You had dis-ease of your soul, and it brought on disease.
Yeah. Right? And on the road, right? I mean, like I said, if I had gone to a doctor at that time, they would have probably been like, you know, you're at risk of diabetes. You know, you got to get the whole speech. Hello, good morning. You are at risk of diabetes, heart disease. You might die. You might not die. Yeah. But if you keep eating that, you're going to die, right? Yeah. Which gives anxiety. I'm so glad I didn't go to the doctor at that time. I probably would have had a whole bunch of anxiety. And I may not have been very good at losing weight. I kind of luckily, thank goodness for the Korean grandmother who came and told it to me in a harsh way.
Yeah, you made your way to this other way of kind of taking back some kind of a different kind of control in your life. You know, I think that like sometimes any way in which we mistreat our bodies or maybe ignore the balance of our system is a direct response to wanting to balance out control in some way, you know? And I think like the way you're describing your upbringing of having like, you know, it's a wonderful upbringing in many ways, but it's also very like tightly controlled, right? Yeah. So it seems natural that you would have wanted to have, there would have been some kind of shift in there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's interesting what you're saying about you, you know, having to go through depression and having to go through all those things in terms of being able to come out, having a better understanding.
Well, I went to therapy as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, Ernest, there's an Ernest Hemingway quote that I love always. That's he's, I'm going to paraphrase, but I think it's almost exactly that he says, life breaks the world breaks everyone. And often most are stronger at the broken places.
Yeah. That's oh, I love the broken places now. Let me tell you.
Yeah.
No, I really love it. I really love it. And now I recognize it so sharply. Like, I'm just like, in a movie, like whenever something happens to me, I'm like, oh, cause you're awesome and you're going to help people. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, that's why you like, God's letting you know how does somebody like really feel. Because sometimes when you're in a professional position of helping people, and I think this is a problem, kind of, I don't like talking about problems, but it's problematic in the world right now because there's like so many gurus helping everybody, right? Most of the time, a lot of the gurus are going, figuring it out themselves and teaching you, you know, like they nobody, I mean, that school isn't everything, but like, you know, so, you know, people are like, they go to India and then they're like, I'm a guru. It's like, oh, you just had the one trip to India. Yeah. I don't know if you're a guru yet, but okay. So, but the perspective, like, you know, even somebody that's a trainer that has been fit all their life doesn't really understand all the struggles. Even now, I've lost weight and, you know, then I went through struggles as a mother now. Postpartum, I also had illness and then I started to gain weight again. This time, not because I wasn't doing the right thing. This time, medicine. This time, thyroid issue that I had, postpartum thyroiditis. And so even then, thank God for it, because now I even understand more, because my only perspective was that you could eat bad and then gain weight. Now I have another perspective that somebody can get sick. Somebody can be told, don't work out, you know, like, so that can affect all the things of that they're getting healthy. So like, thank God too, because then I would only be talking to people from the perspective of, well, come on, get up. You're lazy. You didn't do the workout. You didn't eat the right food. It's like, oh, but how about you're sick and this is all you can eat or get yourself to eat, or you don't have support, or, you know, your thyroid is off and, oh, your medicine is making you sick.
Tenderizer.
Huh?
You were tenderized.
Yeah. So I love.
You're tenderized. You developed deep compassion.
Oh, tenderized. Girl, I like that. Yeah. I like, mommy, you're teaching me. Yes, tenderize. If I say it in another interview, don't get mad at me. I'm going to have to credit you. Like,
no, it's yours. You can say that.
Tenderize. Black people, we love words like that. Tenderize. Yes, we love it.
That's a good Bobbyism for sure.
So what are some of the foods? Tell us more about what your Korean grandmother taught you about cooking, what kind of foods. And
well, I always say, like, at that time she was giving me Korean ingredients more than Korean food. And I was sort of fumbling through. I mean, if you go to H-Mart, okay, there's like 5, 6, 7, 8 different kind of mushrooms. I mean, I ate mushrooms, like, wow. Dried mushrooms. I mean, one time I bought mushrooms for $200, dried mushrooms. I was like, I can't believe. No, I mean, thank God everything else is so well priced, but there's some golden mushroom you could buy over there to eat.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, I just spent $200 on some mushrooms. Oh, my gosh. But then how long did those mushrooms last? Forever and ever. And how delicious, when I added them to water, did they become? Delicious. Delicious. So, I mean, I'll tell you, like, that time I became even vegan, except my only like vegan, like maybe you weren't quite vegan, is kimchi, because it has some fish inside.
Right.
But kimchi is so electric. Like, I feel so alive. Like,
that's a great way of doing
electric.
It.
Like, when I eat kimchi, like, I feel it everywhere. I feel it in my nose. Like, I feel so alive. Yeah. You want to talk about, you know, food. I'm so passionate about it. Food should make you feel alive. Mm-hmm. Yes. And anytime that you don't feel alive like that, you might be as well be dead. You should be feeling so alive all the time. And I know, I don't want to put the thing that like, oh, you should feel good all the time. Like, you know, you could have a bad day. It's not about that. But even in my bad day, I feel alive. And food is part of that aliveness. And in terms of knowing that, it, like, yes, I went from a state of not being in health to starting to eat Korean foods. I ate kimchi all the time. She told me, eat a little kimchi in the morning, a little kimchi in the afternoon. She told me, eat a little, right? You know, the plate is like this big.
Yeah, small.
Look how much kimchi I ate. What? I was like, damn. I was like,
so it is so good.
I imagine that kimchi is a ritual. I imagine that it's a, I've never made it, and I actually haven't eaten much of it in my life. Could you tell our listeners more about exactly what it is and the ritual of making it?
Okay, so kimchi is, you have manapa cabbage, okay? I'll walk you through a fast make a kimchi, okay?
Okay.
So you have manapa cabbage, okay. So then you slit the bottom part, okay, because it's kind of strong on the bottom, and then it goes like this. Not like the round American cabbage. It's like more long, right? So you make some slits on the bottom, and with your hands, you tear them apart, okay? Then you also tear them again. So you have four pieces now, right? One, two, three, four. Teared apart. Oh, when you tear it with your hands, the sound. Oh my God, I love kimchi.
What a better way to cook than to rip something apart with your hands.
You girl, like there's no start. Cut it with the knife. It's no. Tear it apart.
Love it.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect.
So then you salt that and leave it. And you turn it and you turn it and you turn it. I have a video game actually called Korean Cooking Friends coming out that you guys have to play.
Oh my God, that's awesome.
And you can make Korean, you can make kimchi in the game.
That
so you
so
can
cool.
experience that. So you rip it apart, and then now you're chopping different vegetables, carrots and all different raw vegetables. And we won't go through it all because we're going to go, we don't going to be here all day, but carrots and different vegetables, raw radish, etc. And then you're making a porridge, right? It's like you make a porridge, and then you're putting pepper into that porridge. So now you have like a red pepper porridge, and then you have another mix of ginger, garlic that has been blended up to make kind of like a little gingery, garlicky, oniony sauce. So the porridge with the red pepper, the gingery, garlicky thing, and then the raw vegetables are mixed. So now you have this like red porridgey mix of thing, and then that porridge is now spread onto the leaves, right? Which you wash that salt off. And now the leaves are a bit floppy. And then you're lifting each leaf, you're putting paste. Each leaf, you're putting paste. Each leaf, you're putting paste. Then you roll that up, and then you're putting that into something which is airtight. And it stays on your counter for 4 days. And then 4 days after, it goes in the fridge. And, you know, you shouldn't open it. You should just leave it. Even if you feel like you messed up, just leave it. The airtight is the thing. You know what I'm saying?
Totally.
So,
yeah. I love kimchi. Also, and I agree when you were saying it's electric, it's such a wonderful way of describing it because it really does feel like that kind of like mini crunch into it. And it's just like a burst of vitality. It's a beautiful
thing. It's a beautiful thing.
I've heard from
Korean
friends about their grandmothers who used to bury the kimchi in the backyard.
Yeah, and an ongi. I wish I actually have one, but now after the setup of the Korean over here, I don't want to move because he's got the camera over here, he's got this over here.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's so good.
It's so good.
Many lessons about life, you know? And you know, if you talk about like, there's so many cycles. I mean, it's like, I live in Hawaii. I was born in Africa. Like, thank God I'm back like in nature. Because you see death all the time. You know what I mean? The only death you see sometimes in city, you don't get to see the process of life. So death is shocking. It's like a shock.
Yes.
It's like only death you hear about, I mean, besides your own personal death, which sometimes you're not even close to that because you've moved far away from wherever you came from to come to New York City or wherever you where you, whatever you left that you felt you didn't want to be part of, to come to New York City. And so then what do you hear? Where do you hear about death? On the news.
Right.
Where do you hear? So that's like not fun death. You know, it's like, oh, a man was shot and stabbed 7 times.
Totally. It's violent death.
CNN reports. You're like, oh, yeah. Why don't that happen to me? And God forbid they look like you in the story. You're like, oh, sure. That could happen to me. You know, you're like holding that. And then the other death that you are experiencing all the time is the death of your vegetables, which you don't seem to be able to make last from Monday to Friday. Or you don't seem to get to eat them. And what do you find? A bunch of dead vegetables in your fridge. You're like, I was going to make that salad. I didn't make it. I went to eat out instead. Now they're dead and rotten in my fridge. I've wasted money. It's just like the death of like your food. You know what I mean? So
food. That's a very interesting way of putting it.
Yeah. I mean, people that are in a natural environment and a lot of the processes that we experience of things that may last a little bit longer. You know, people say, how do you make your vegetables last longer? I said, eat them, and then they'll be inside you, and you'll last
longer.
That's
a very good point. Grow them.
Or grow them. Right, there you go. So there's grow them, right? So then they will be outside, and you'd only pick them at the time, and the quality and the feeling and the vibration from them when you're growing them is going to be one way. You know, and then you have people like Korean culture now preserving. You know, kimchi ain't going bad. I had kimchi. Yeah. Listen, and kimchi is really like the best to think about your life, okay? Like, I learned so many things from kimchi. Like, okay, so you make it, and it's 4 days on the counter, and you pop it in the fridge, you eat it, and if you take care of it, kimchi gonna last. You can make, kimchi can stay for a long time. Then what happens to kimchi after a long while? It becomes a bit sour, right? But do the Koreans say, oh, it's so sour, I'm gonna throw it out? No, they make kimchi jjigae, which is a stew. No, they make kimchi fried rice with it. And that sour is the best. That aging of the kimchi is the best. So now you start to like aging, right? You're like, oh, the better, the older, the sour, the this, the that. It's not exactly the smell, everything about it. You start to be like, yes. Aging is not so bad, and there's a way to preserve and continue.
Is it a metaphor for aging, for liking aging?
I think so. I think so, because even if you start to like something as it becomes older and changes, maybe you're going to start to like yourself a little bit more, too.
That's right.
By osmosis. You know, like, I see death all the time. First of all, cats are out living. I've seen cats out there. I see chickens every day. I see cats die all the time here, like you know, cars or whatever else is going through. I see dead birds when I go running. I see death much more than ever before. I see worms. Right. I see ants. I see, you know what I mean? Sometimes I'm killing something. Sometimes I'm trying to bring it outside. Yeah. I mean, like, more. I'm trying to, like, ants. Yo, ants need to give me a humanitarian prize for the treatment of their lives, okay? Forget any humanitarian award I ever won in my life. Ants gotta get it together and give me an Oscar for trying to free them back outside.
That's hilarious.
You know what I mean?
It's an interesting thing you're saying, though, about seeing death so much.
And food. You know what I mean? It's like eating, and when does it's time to eat it. It's waiting. It's all of these things that, like, nature makes you much less. You see, seeing death and trees, and they, like, in Hawaii, it's like my tree right here is flowers, then they die, then they come back, like, more than in other places when there's just waiting for spring. Here it happens continuously. It's just they die, they come back, they die, they come back. My kids know it. They die, they come back. So even my kids and I, we talk about death much, much, much more. Like, it's less shocking. And even any anxieties that may remain, I'm much more aware of, like, the cycle of life that is happening. And so even in grief, thinking about grief and your own life and your own death, it helps you to know that you're like, you're eating something. This thing came from the tree. It had its own death. It's giving you a thing. It's going through you. You're going this. So like food and grief and life and just nature is all the time.
Versus yeah, you're part of the life cycle.
This one moment, like, I'm going to die. Because I was
totally.
Very
well, it helps. It helps, I think, have more of an acceptance of like the whole picture of a life cycle in general. And Africa, I wanted to touch on something that you had mentioned in, you know, kind of your pre-interview too, is that you've had another, you know, you had a very significant experience with grief in your own life through a loss of a child. What is it?
Yeah, I have a lot of twins in my family, boy, girl, twins. Yeah. So I had boy, girl, twins, first pregnancy, something that I talk about in the Korean book. I had twins the first time. I had twins the second time as well. Uh-huh. And had I not been advanced maternal age, I may not even have known that I lost my child. It's just that I was in advanced maternal age and you going in a bit earlier to be checked out, that they saw that I was having two. And then by the time they went to check, there was one heartbeat and then the other heartbeat. And from this balanced place, I can even talk to you. But I didn't realize it was going to affect me like as it did. I was like, oh. I kept thinking like, oh, no. It's just keep checking. Why don't you? And I didn't even realize I was going to be reacting like that. I think I had a mother friend that went through it. And she actually handled it quite well. She was like, oh, thank God one survived. And I was like, oh, I think that's how I would be. I'm so positive.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, but that wasn't the case. And then I realized how much the human mind can compartmentalize, because what I didn't want to do was have my daughter have a bad time in the womb. And I was very aware that she would be feeling everything that happened in eating food that is electric and vibrant. I feel my body as I eat. Even now, I mean, I feel water go down me. I'm acutely aware of inside my body now. Like ever before, sometimes it's a little loud. I'm like, why do I have to feel it when it goes? Like, you know, I tell my husband, I'm like, sometimes I'm too awake. I don't want to know about like that it's hit my left side of my stomach. Like, why do I still feel the water? Like, I'm too aware. So
yeah, totally.
So I was acutely aware because of how I had been eating and eating Korean food that electrifies my body. I feel my body from that food, very alive. And so I was acutely aware that my child would also feel everything. So I made a decision that I was not going to mourn anymore for this pregnancy. Some you could say I did it well, or you could say I didn't do it so well. But I certainly.
Well, I think that judgment isn't necessary. Yeah. You just did what you needed to do.
I tried to dance, but then like everything that I knew I had learned how to do from that grandmother at time, everything that I had done, you know, like with my first pregnancy with twins, I couldn't do because then they were like, oh, the placenta, lie, don't work out, don't go crazy, and I was like, don't work out. That's my. I've been doing that now for 10 years. I lost 110 pounds. That's what I do.
That's how I feel good.
This is my thing.
You found different ways of healing?
Yeah. So then I was like, what am I going to do? Like, I was like, I had to like manage that feeling too. Like, oh my gosh. So I can't go for like a run. Like I can't lift. I can't squat. I was like, squats. Gotta do some squats. They were like, no squats. I was like, okay. Ugh. No squats. Okay. I'll meditate. Okay. I'll keep meditating. But like, I definitely like when you eat the food that I eat, you get, when you eat, you know, kenip and persimmon and kimchi and you know, this is food that makes you feel like here like I am at 5 a.m. Look how I feel. Look how
exactly.
I am. You know what I'm saying? I'm not like, I'm like, hey. Yeah. So
totally.
Like, what do you do with the like, hey, you know what I mean? Like, my food is that like, energy. Hey, welcome, hey, how you doing? 100%. So I was like, okay, this is weird. Like, it did, that did affect me. And then Bayman came out. I was like laughing the whole pregnancy, the whole birth. I mean, these two nurses that I had, I mean, I wish they had delivered my child, to be honest with you. The doctor, I don't know. But the girls were awesome. And the entire time I was laughing till Bayman came out. And then, like, she came out and I was like, the doctor yanked my placenta out. I don't know if that should have been or not done. It felt wrong. I don't think the way she did it.
It seemed wrong.
The way that she did it wasn't right. But
yanking should never be part of
it. I just felt like she just, like, I had such a good experience. And then I just felt like she just, like, just the way that I thought she should have waited a minute. Like, you know. Anyway, she yanked out my placenta and I just, like, threw up. Right?
Oh, my God.
And at the moment I, like, threw up, Bayman was out, I was like, okay, now what? Okay? Like, now what? Thank God my mom was there, all happy times, but, like, too much was going on. And I think that was showing that, like, the way that I made some decisions, and I was like, let's go to this house, let's go to this place, I miss my baby. It was hard.
Yeah.
I did. I missed the baby. I was looking for the baby.
Africa, that sounds like it's part of the wholeness, you know, to have felt all those feelings together and to be able to deeply feel the grief.
Yeah.
It's not something you can put in a compartment,
no.
Right?
Yeah. I definitely miss the baby. I would sleep with a pillow on my belly. I still do sometimes. I still have sometimes one pillow on my belly. And I'm okay now. I know, but you know, like, I still have to talk myself to understand and be okay, because I understand and I even did therapy and everything. But the minute you have a kid in your stomach, that's your baby.
Yeah, and, it is.
But that baby too, like that harsh thing, that baby too saved me, you know, like Bayman and that baby. I would have never wrote this book, and I would never be in Hawaii, and I would never have gone through all that I went through, and I would never be able to talk to, like, mothers or anybody if it hadn't been that baby didn't come. It was meant to be, and I would never erase it ever, because I needed, actually, I thought that I was all good, but that baby cracked me right open. But I was meant to be broken right open. I was meant to open up my heart again. And at that time, these Korean moms, I joined the Korean mom group. Something that people told me, I would never be in any Korean mom group. They don't let people in their groups, all that. Like, I heard it all.
Yeah.
I hear that, all that. Even my husband, they're like, they never go. He's not going to marry you and all that. Well, he did. He sure did. In a hurry, too. They said the same thing to me about, like, Korean mothers. But guess what? These Korean moms, my book is dedicated to Korean moms.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Korean moms, boy. Let me tell you about these girls. Oh, my God. They are the best. They are the best. And I didn't have friendships in a normal way because of how I grew up. So I didn't know, like, girlfriend, girlfriends. Like, you know, I didn't know friendship in a certain kind of way. They are teaching me about friendship. And if I never had broken like that, I would never have been vulnerable enough to be open to accept friendship like that. Because certainly people did want to be my friend. I'm awesome.
I mean, from spending 45 minutes with you, we're already like, I hope that we become, you're an amazing person.
I am awesome. I'm a good person, right? I know that. Definitely. So like, certainly people did, but I never really like, you know, I was a bit sabotager of like, you know, relationships and also friendships because I didn't know I didn't know. Yeah. Like, okay, like you become friends and then what? Like, what happens? Like, I go to France in 2 days.
<That's> or
I go
kind back,
I have to go to boarding school. So I never really learned how to like be somebody's friend. And I think like I make mistakes. Like, I even make mistakes now. There's even some people that don't like me now, but I don't say everything, right? Because like in my upbringing, like you don't say all your accomplishments because sometimes those accomplishments can seem like they're quite big. Like when you go out in the world, you realize everybody didn't have lunch with the president or sit with meet Harry Belafonte or whatever.
That's pretty like put a pin in that right there, Harry Belafonte.
It's my book. It's in the Korean book that when I met Harry Belafonte, his smile, is like, wow. Movie star.
Wait to see the book. Do you have pictures in the book too? Or
no, but I think I painted a nice picture with my words.
Oh my God, absolutely. Africa, I just want to mention one thing, you know, just talking about, and thank you so much, by the way, for sharing that very vulnerable and difficult kind of part of your life and that memory, because I know that's not easy. And I just think it's interesting kind of putting together some of the things you told us about yourself and like, you know, especially like after you were told that your daughter, you know, wasn't going to make it to a full term and to be able to be born. And your instinct to kind of like be positive and to and I think all of those things are wonderful, but I do think it, and you know, in tandem with being told you can't exercise and can't move and needed to be still
very hard.
I don't know. Sometimes like the universe or whatever it is, or God, if you believe in God or, you know, just gives us these messages of like, you know, against our will to like slow down and to like stay down
to
almost
be with what is.
Somebody asked me one time in an interview, they asked me like, what would something you could tell, what would be a piece of advice about your own grieving process be? Because I've had some pretty shitty times myself and been down there pretty far. And I was like, well, I would stay down for a minute and look around and see what you find at the bottom of the ocean, you know, because there's some very interesting things down there. There's weird glowing fish. There's interesting coral. There's stuff you would have never been able to see.
Your soul.
Right. And like, nobody wants to necessarily be told, like, get down as far as you can go. And like, but when you're down there, if you do look around, there's very interesting stuff and you can take some of it with you and pull it out at another time.
Yeah. And
that really seems like that happened to you.
Yeah. I mean, where I was going with the Harry Belafonte thing and the people that don't like me, because everybody was only wants to talk about what is good about you. But there's some other things, which is that what I was getting to was like, of what I learned too, even from people that don't like me, is that because of like whatever experiences that I had, I don't say them right off the bat, which for two reasons. One is that I just, if you like me, you should just like me, not because of whatever. And also because I don't want to like outshine people, even though I don't think that what I went through is better than what somebody else went through. It can kind of take the room. My experience can take the room. And what I learned there from this opening and this letting of people into friendship is that I need to learn how to like be myself, not and like I need to learn how to like, you know, be in a regular friendship. Like I don't know how to do it exactly. Because, and when you're saying be on the bottom and look around, I feel like even right now, I still gotta be on the bottom and look around and look at myself and really understand, like, how do I have life? Like, simple life. How do I be in a room with my experience, not shrink myself, but not feel like I have to overwhelm? It's something I'm learning even now, because
it brings back to Dara's word balance. It brings us back to balance.
It's like, right? Okay, like, I love it when somebody doesn't like me sometimes, you know what I mean? And like, my husband is totally different culturally. It's just, if you don't, it just.
Your husband is Korean, right?
He's nothing to say to you. Like, he's not gonna, if you like yelling at him, he's not gonna like really get into it. He doesn't really like get emotionally caring. But he sometimes thinks that I talk too long to somebody that is not liking me. But that's because I'm trying to like learn. Because I'm always trying to like learn. I feel like it's a good quality. Sure. Like, you know, don't talk to haters too long, but whatever. That's me. I'm like, what? So what now? You don't know about me? Because they usually have something that you can learn, even if they're like going through all their stuff. So like, haters are just fascinating to me, because I think, much like with the Korean grandmother, when she was yelling at me, perfect saying, example. Hey, you're too fat. I could have been like, oh, really? And fabulous. Right, sure. Or behind her was something I could learn.
Absolutely.
And so I think
about yourself.
Mm-hmm. So I think that the grieving and the cracking open and the eating the amazing food led me to this group of women. And in these group of women, they were my healing. They were a big part of my healing, because as I was grieving and healing, and I went through, oh my God, anxiety. I never even realized that. Now I realize I had anxiety. Since I had this horrible anxiety that came with the illness and all after this, and you can read all of that in the Korean book and all that happened. But now I realize, like, I did have some anxiety, like, because now that I know what anxiety feels like, I'm like, oh.
Exactly.
I'm anxious, ain't I? Like, I've been totally anxious.
That's the funny thing about anxiety. I remember before I even knew, I definitely have anxiety. I think a lot of people do. But before you like know what it is, you're like, oh, that person has anxiety, or that person, you're like, oh wait, I have anxiety. Like,
yeah,
I just never,
ones.
Once you know how to identify it, you're like, God, it's everywhere.
Yeah,
you know
what I mean? You're like, I'm anxious.
It's all over.
You're your next level. I mean, you know, but even New Yorkers, we're a little neurotic and anxious in our own ways, but.
Yes, I wake up like this.
Every
morning, like Nosferatu.
Yeah. The food, it's like, the food was so good for the grieving in that, well, when my father died, boy, did I handle that well, I think. I mean, I think I handled that pretty well. I mean, in a sense,
when did he die?
I was at my healthiest place when my father died.
When was that?
Oh no, gotta read that Korean book, girl. I can't give it all away.
Okay,
but
fine.
He did die, and I really handled that well. I was at my healthiest place. My food that I was eating was like knocking on the door for me to be back to like, there's no way. Oh my gosh. Go to H Mart, buy all the produce and
we're
get
gonna
some
go
kimchi.
In a little while. It's about 20 minutes from here. So
yeah,
we're gonna be
we have one over here.
Eat
we're
the
gonna
raw,
go over
eat,
there.
Eat the produce raw. Like, eat their produce raw.
God.
And then eat
such
their,
a good prince.
Yeah, and then eat the, you know, then eat not too much meat and then eat like kimchi and get a bunch of the sides. Like, think of it like a salad bar. Get a bunch of greens, ones that you don't know, and don't cook them. Like the bok choy, all the things that you usually steam. Don't.
Yeah.
Just get all the greens. And then buy the sides. And then think of it like a salad bar, right? So instead of doing dressing, put the food. So it's like, put seasoned vegetables on your food.
Yeah.
And then have some kimchi. Can't wait.
So you know what I hear you saying is that really, as humans, we help heal each other. We're like, mirrors for each other, and we help each other heal. And that's what you've done for us today.
Totally.
By sharing your story.
Amazing.
So
Africa, thank you so much. Yes. So at the end of each episode, we always ask everyone the same thing, which is, if you could have given yourself one piece of advice, knowing what you know now after your experience at the kind of beginning of your grief journey, and for you, that could be, you know, the experience in H Mart, or it could be, you know, after learning of the passing of your child, whatever, you know, or after your dad's passing, whatever point that is for you. But if you could give your younger self some advice, having kind of the wisdom you have now, what would that be?
Absolutely nothing. Because everything that you're supposed to go through is preparing you for where you're supposed to be. And absolutely, I would tell her not one thing.
Because I love that. No one's ever said that. That's good.
Never. I wouldn't tell her a thing. She's fine. She's fine. Good. She's going to be fine. And she is a really special girl. I actually look back to her now and ask myself about her now, because she took on a lot of things and managed a lot of things. You know, fat is really like your body reacting to toxic. Fat holds the toxicity, which they say, that's why when you can't lose weight too fast, like, you're releasing all these toxins. Okay. So that young girl, okay, moved from Cameroon as a child to a new country. Then she was exposed to all these cultures and she took it on. And then she was exposed to having to try to navigate who she was in another country and she took it on. Then she created things. Then she tried all the foods, sure did. She ate all the food she didn't eat, wasn't supposed to eat. She ate it and she got so fat and she was still gorgeous, but she was so fat. And did she stay fat? No, she didn't. She was able to hear somebody tell her about getting well. And did she listen? She sure did. And did she get better? She sure did. And did she want to get married? She sure did. Is she married? She sure is. Yay. Did she open herself to another culture? She sure did. So I'm not going to tell that girl a dang thing. I'm going to follow her advice. And I'm going to, whenever something comes up, I'm going to keep handling it just like that girl.
Amen. Beautiful.
That's good. That's a good one. That's a good one. It might be the best advice, non-advice that... Non-advice that we've ever heard. I really, that's very beautiful and very like empowering and wonderful and special and unique advice. It's great.
And your name is the name of my favorite niece. Oh, sorry to the other nieces. I shouldn't
really
say that.
Now you've outed your favorite niece.
Oh, she knows already. She
also
knows.
Africa, one other thing we also do on the show is, you know, we miss being able to kind of, we used to have people in the studio all the time, and it is awesome we get to talk to folks like yourself who are, you know, in totally different parts of the world, but we miss the, like, the togetherness. So we kind of ask everyone, if we were going to eat dinner together, ooh, we're going to share a meal, what would we all bring?
Well, we did it. We went to H Mart.
Right.
We actually did it.
What's your background?
I'm going to let Africa make our meal for us.
Tell me, what is your background? What is your background?
My background is my mother was from Yugoslavia.
Ah, okay. And what did you grow up eating that was Yugoslavian?
Strudel, cabbage. Stuffed cabbage.
Those stews from Yugoslavia.
Chicken stew with lots of good root vegetables and little chicken meatballs. And my mother was a wonderful cook and very Slavic.
Yeah.
I'm going to bring some mandu because we're talking about Korean food. I love a dumpling. I'm going to bring some dumplings. I'm going to bring some mandus to this dinner party.
Well, I think if I'm coming to this dinner party, I'm probably going to be bringing a Yugoslavian stew.
Oh, yum.
I'm gonna throw it down. I'm gonna be with my extra, extra knowledge, and I'm probably gonna bring a Yugoslavian stew so you can tell me more stories about your beautiful mother.
Oh, that's awesome. Africa, this was a very special episode. Yes. You are a very special
person. I like you.
We like you too. Your energy is incredible. We can't wait to read your book. I mean, like, literally cannot
wait. TheKoreanBook.com. It's like, what book? The Korean book. Yes, the Korean
book. Cool. And where can we find you on social media? Like, where can people follow you?
At Africa Yoon.
Okay.
And if you're looking for any cooking of Korean, I have a group, the Korean Cooking Friends. But come to at Africa Yoon on Instagram, and it will take you all those things.
Wonderful. All right. Yay. And next, you know, I've never been to Hawaii, but I would love to go.
I'm on Oahu. If you come to Hawaii, you have a Hawaiian friend. Exactly. Like, I love living in Hawaii because everybody comes here, they're in a good mood. I'm like, this is the best place. Totally. Everyone comes on vacation, so I get like the best mood of everybody.
The best of everybody.
It's like, we're in Hawaii mood.
Africa, thank you so much. And it was like such a pleasure talking. What a beautiful way for us to be able to start the day. And thank you so much for joining us. It was great to meet you.
Well, thank you for helping me start my day too. Okay.
All right.
We'll take
it
care.
Bye.
This episode is brought to you by Hot Dish Productions, an award-winning modern culinary production company specializing in creative digital video, photography, and podcast production. From concept through post-production, Hot Dish creates and produces compelling food stories that ignite the chef in all. Hot Dish Productions has deep connections to award-winning and celebrity chefs and over 20 years' experience. Their team has won both a James Beard Award and an IACP Award for their work in food media. Hot Dish Productions delivers the highest quality product at a fair value. Let them help tell your culinary story today. Explore their work and learn more at hotdishproductions.com.
Thank you so much for joining us for Processing. We realize that sharing these types of deeply intimate stories on air is a very personal decision. We began this project as a way to connect our listeners through shared experiences and storytelling. We hope that Processing can be a platform for sharing, learning, and healing. We appreciate our guests' willingness to be vulnerable and value nothing more than making both our guests' and listeners' experiences with our show positive and progressive. If you're interested in being a guest on the show or writing in a listener letter, please email processing@heritageradionetwork.org. Please follow us at processing_podcast on Instagram. Processing is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/Heritage Radio Network. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click at the heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.